Okay. First of all, good evening. Great to see you all. Thank you all for joining. Nice crowd today. It's really great to be studying together and saw so many of you just the other day for our Zoom. It was really good to see you all so often. I titled this class The Definitive Introduction to Devarim. Those of you who know me, I wouldn't say something, I hope I wouldn't say something that presumptuous on a normal basis, but I did say it that way, that this is the definitive introduction to Devarim, because as we'll see, at least according to many commentators, the introduction to Devarim is actually embedded into the text of this book. Okay? So the book of Devarim is actually introduced in the book. We don't have to go to other commentators, but as we'll see, the opening passages of Devarim, according to some, really helps us understand the entirety of the book. And that's really my focus today. I guess we're not going to walk away with any specific, I don't think, any moral lessons. But one thing that I have appreciated more and more with time is the big picture. Very often, my education was focused on, was zooming in. It was about the details. And sometimes because of that, you lose the forest, right? You lose that big, big perspective. So we are beginning the book of Devarim this week, and I want us to understand, what is this book all about? What is the theme of this book? What are the ideas behind this book? That's my goal today, is to give you that big bird's eye view picture. And as we'll see, much of that is really embedded into the text of the book itself. So what we're going to do, I'm going to share my screen right now, and you'll be able to see the text, the opening passage of Devarim. You should all see that. Do you all see that? Right over there? Elah HaDevarim. So let's just read it together. I'm going to read it in Hebrew. There's an English translation, courtesy of Mechon Mamre. So let's begin. And again, you're all on mute, but do feel free to take yourself off of mute at any point that you'd like. Okay? So here we go. So, Elah HaDevarim, asher diber Moshe el kol Yisrael. These are the words that Moshe spoke to the Jewish people. Be'ever HaYarden, on the other side of the Jordan, right? They are right outside of Israel at this point, right? The other side of the Jordan. Ba'midbar, in the desert. Ba'arava, by the plains. Mol Suf, opposite the Suf. What is Suf? Presumably that is the Yam Suf, okay? The Sea of Reeds that the Jewish people crossed. So we're being told that they were opposite that location. Bein Paran uvein Tofel, between Paran and Tophel, these are locations. V'Lavan v'Chatzeros, and these other locations, Lavan Chatzeros, v'Dizahav, and Dizahav. So we have in this verse, an incredible amount, 8 different locations are mentioned over here. We have to understand what is being described, right? Look at all those words. Again, these are the words that Moshe told the Jewish people on the other side of the Jordan. First part of the verse, great, we get it. The second part goes and gives a whole bunch of geographic locations. The desert, the plain, opposite the Yamsuf, between Paran, between Tophel, Lavan, Chatzeros, Dizahav. All these seemingly are locations. And the question is, why are we mentioning so many locations over here? What exactly is going on? Okay, that's the most obvious thing that should jump out at you as you begin the book of Devarim. Okay, let's read another complicated verse. Achad Asar Yom Mechorev. Where they were situated, it seems, this is a simple way to read the verse, they were 11 days from Chorev, okay? Chorev is another word for Har Sinai, okay? Derech Har Seir, on the way to Seir, ad Kadesh Barnea, until a place called Kadesh Barnea, right? So did you catch what? We just listed, again, another couple of geographic locations in the discussion about, in the opening verses of this book, telling us that Moshe spoke these words, and then this long, long string of locations. If you're having a hard time following, then you're following very well. Because this verse, right, is the opening line of Devarim, but we don't put much thought into it. There's all these locations, and it seems like it's describing where Moshe's speaking, but there seems to be way too many places listed to be describing a single location. Right? Sometimes you're going to have, 2 points to give you the exact location. Over here we have all these different geographic locations mentioned. Let's come back to that. Let's keep on reading. Vayhi bar bam shana was the 40th year, okay? Ba'ashte asar chodesh, on the 11th month, ba'echad lachodesh, on the first day of the 11th month. The 11th month, according to the Torah, is which month? The month of Adar, right? In the Hebrew, in the biblical count, the first month is Nisan. So this is the first of the month of Adar. Diber Moshe al Bnei Israel. Moshe spoke. And here you see I highlighted it because those words are repeated now. Moshe spoke to the Jewish people, right? Which is clearly repetitive because in verse 1, it said, these are the words which Moshe spoke. So now it's mentioning Moshe spoke again to the Jewish people. Kichol asher tziva Hashem oso aleihem, according to what God commanded him, according to what God commanded Moshe about the Jewish people. Okay, more description. When did this take place? Acharei hakoso esichon melech ha'amori. After the Jewish people defeated Sichon, who is the Amorite king, Asher Yoshe b'Cheshbon, who lived in the place called Cheshbon, Ves Og melech ha'Bashan, and Og, the king of Bashan, Asher Yoshe b'Ashtaros b'Edrei, who lived in those places, Ashtaros and Edrei. Be'ever ha'Yardin, again by the way, opposite the Jordan, Be'eretz Moav, in the country of Moav, in the land of Moav, Hoel Moshe Be'er Esatora Hazos Lemar, Moshe began to expound and explain this Torah. I just read 5 psukim. These are the opening 5 psukim of the book of Devarim, and I hope you appreciated how strange these psukim are, right? What did we just read? What in the world did we just read, right? Basically, it seems like it's a very long way of telling us where and when Moshe told whatever is going to follow to the Jewish people, right? I mean, basically we're saying there's things that Moshe is going to teach the Jewish people, and it takes 5 verses to do so, and the truth is, it's not so helpful, because, you know, the simplest way to read this is actually quite, it doesn't give you a location, it gives you so many locations, which seem to make it rather complicated, and then tells you the 40th year, the 11th month, and it gives you a whole bunch of historic events that led up to it as well. What's going on? I know I'm asking a very open-ended general question, but the description is way too open-ended and hard to understand. What is the meaning of all of this? Okay, so my goal over here, again, is to explain these 5 verses only, and in doing so, we'll see that this is really as I mentioned, the definitive introduction to Devarim. Because as we'll see, these psukim maybe are more than just describing the particular section we're about to read, but maybe may help us understand the entirety of the book of Devarim. Okay? So let's begin, before we get to these broader ideas, we'll begin with what I call the pshat, the simplest explanation. Something the Rashbam says. The Rashbam was a grandson of whom? He was a grandson of Rashi. And his commentary, interestingly, is really the exact opposite of Rashi. Rashi will always be invoking the Midrashic literature, and we'll see some of that today. The Rashbam, his grandson, wrote a commentary, and there he doesn't explain, he just sticks to the simplest read of the text. That is the beauty of the Rashbam's commentary. It's very elegant, very simple, straightforward. It helps you just appreciate the simple read of the text. And he suggests all those locations we just read is really a very complicated way of telling us a single location. If you want to know exactly where Moshe was standing when he gave this address to the Jewish people, it was, and let's go back to verse 1, it was at the opposite of side of the Jordan, in the desert, which is in the plains area, which happens to be opposite the Yamsuf, between a location called Paran and Tophel, and locations Lavan and Chatzeros and Dizahav, so it's somewhere between those locations, and it is 11-day journey from Chorev, and it's also on the way from Har Seir until Kadesh Barnea. It is one long description of a single geographic location. According to the Rashbam, verse 1 and 2 are simply telling us, where was Moshe when he gave this address? Okay, again, it's a lot of geographic locations. If we'd have more time, we would open up a map and make sure that all these locations actually could pinpoint one singular place. Many point out that some of these locations are all over the place. How could it really be a description of one place? But we'll leave that on the side. Let's pause for a second and just ask ourselves, So according to the Rashbam, these psukim are describing a single geographic location. And now let's ask another question. What is the purpose? What is the content of this book? So the Ramban, Nachmanides, in his introduction, suggests the following idea. He suggests that the book of Devarim is a book that was written for inheritors of the land of Israel. In other words, he suggests the book of Shemos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, those are laws that were directed at the first generation. And now this second generation of Jews are about to enter the land of Israel. There are numerous laws which are unique to the land of Israel. And therefore, the purpose of this entire book is to give the unique laws that are relevant to the land of Israel, and that's one goal. The other laws that we'll find here are laws that no one had these questions before. The question never arose, and therefore, only now is Moshe actually going into any detail. Okay? That's the Ramban's understanding. If you were to ask the Ramban, what is the theme of the mitzvos in this book of Devarim? He would tell you the mitzvos revolve around two ideas. One, mitzvos that relates to the land of Israel, okay? And because these people are going into the land of Israel. And two, it's questions which didn't come up yet. And now Moshe, before he dies, says, hey, listen, I know you guys didn't ask me this yet, but let me tell you about X, Y, Z, because I'm not going to be around forever, okay? Now, the Abarbanel, Don Isaac Abarbanel, takes great issue with this. He points out that there are many laws earlier on in the Chumash which describe the land of Israel and unique laws that are only relevant to the land of Israel. Anyone have any examples? Any thoughts? There's a whole section.
Shemitah,
that's right. Shemitah, right? Bahar, Bichukosai, an extensive discussion. It's not just in passing. There's an extensive discussion of Shemitah, of a law that will only takes place in the land of Israel, right? So the Ramban's saying, yeah, the first four books were for the people in a desert. The fifth book is for people going into the land of Israel. Well, it doesn't seem to add up because there are many laws that are mentioned that were unique to the land of Israel and yet were taught earlier. So that's one question he asks. The other question he asks, he says, is it true that all the laws that come up in this book weren't relevant before? He says, for example, one of the laws that is only mentioned in the book of Devarim is the law of divorce. And he says, is divorce something that never came up? I don't know, maybe in a hagiography we would say that the Jewish people there was no marital strife in 40 years in the desert. But presumably there was, right? So divorce never came up before. So the Abarbanel asks about that and many other things. He says there's certainly some of the laws in this book presumably did come up before. And therefore the Abarbanel makes the following really audacious argument. And he says every law in the book of Devarim, even if it seems unique, even if it seems like it was never taught before, really was taught before, and he argues each time a new, seemingly new law comes up. He says, oh yeah, it was taught before, and he shows where it's hinted to, and the purpose of the book of Devarim is where Moshe goes ahead and elaborates and explains anything that may have been missed. So basically the Abarbanel says, you know what the book of Devarim is all about? You know what the mitzvos are all about in the book of Devarim? It's all about clarifying laws that were taught earlier, details that need to be explained. That's what this book is all about. Okay. So that's a very, those two ideas are very famous ideas, the Ramban and Abarbanel, but they only address the theme of the laws in this book. The truth is, there's really more to this book. There is a large segment which is legal, which is what the Ramban and Abarbanel are arguing about. What is the theme of those mitzvos? But there's also the opening section of the book, which is history, okay? History of certain unique episodes in the history of the Jewish people traveling in the desert. And at the end of the book, there are blessings and curses. A whole string of warnings given to the Jewish people. If they do what's right, this will happen. If they do what's wrong, this will happen. So let's keep that in mind, that it's seemingly there are three sections to this book. And now, keep everything I told you in mind. I'm sorry, we're jumping around a little bit. Let's go back to these verses and see how the classical commentators understand them. Okay, so you still have the screen in front of you. Let's read through these verses. I'm going to share with you how Rashi reads these verses, okay? Remember, the question we asked is, what's with all the locations? His grandson, Rashbam, said, yeah, it's really pinpointing one location. Sometimes I'll tell you, if someone wants to figure out where my house is, I'll tell you, it's between where Green Spring and Cross Country meet and Steel, between the apartments and a good of Green. I don't know, I'll mention a whole bunch of places. That's the simplest way to say it. He's giving a whole bunch of landmarks to tell you how to find where he's speaking. Rashi says, no way. The Torah wouldn't go into so much geographic detail, and he understands this entire section homiletically. Okay, he sees each of these verses really as being a drasha. It's really alluding to some hidden idea. This is what Rashi says. I'm gonna paraphrase much of Rashi as we'll reread these verses. This is what Rashi says. Eile hadevarim asher diber Moshe. These are the words that Moshe spoke. Now, the fact that it says devarim, words, the commentators will often say that the word devarim is different than a ma'amar. Ma'amar is a statement and a davar is a statement. But davar has a much stronger and harsher connotation. Actually, the word itself, davar, is much stronger than, ledaber is much stronger than emor, which is a much softer type of word. Very often, the Hebrew language, the words themselves, even the sound of the word, reflects a little bit of the nature. So a dibor is a much stronger connotation, and it has a harsh connotation. So Rashi suggests that what's going on over here is that Moshe is giving rebuke to the Jewish people. Okay? The words Eile Hadvarim, the fact that these are the words, meaning these are the harsh words that Moshe shared with the Jewish people. Okay? Now, what were the words that he shared? Okay? It doesn't tell us. These verses that we read over here, it doesn't seem to talk to any, any seeming rebuke, but he says that's because we're not reading the verse properly. Okay? So he says like this. He says, the pasuk says, okay, again, he's in the other side of the Jordan, Bamidbar in the desert. Rashi says, it's not describing where Moshe is standing, but rather, it's a thinly veiled critique. What is Bamidbar a reference to? Okay? So he says, Lo Bamidbar, he says, what is the Midbar? The fact that in the book of Shemos, it says, Mi yitain Musenu Bamidbar. The Jewish people complain. As soon as they enter the desert, they say, why are you killing us in this desert? So the word Bamidbar alludes to that episode, okay? Then the next word, Ba'arava, in the plains, okay? What is the plains a reference to? It speaks to, there was a sin that took place, we read not that long ago, that when the Jewish people were in Arvos Moav, the plains of Moav, they sinned with this idol Baal Peor. We spoke about this idol last week. So again, Rashi's saying, Bamidbar, there's a critique about what they said about the desert. Barava, Moshe's critiquing them and reminding them and criticizing them for what they did with Arvot Moav, in the plains of Moav. Mol Suf, again, here clearly it's an allusion to the Yam Suf. What sin took place at the Yam Suf? The Jewish people, what did they say at the Yam Suf? They said, Moshe, you took us here? Are there not enough burial spots in Mitzrayim? Right? So it's an allusion to their sin over there. Okay? Bein Paran uvein Tofel vilavan. Okay? So Rashi over here quotes the Midrashim, which says Rav Yochanan, one of the sages, they looked through all of Tanakh, and there is not a location, there is no location called Tofel and Lavan. Right? So what is Tofel and Lavan a reference to? So he says, Shetaflu al Haman. Okay? Taflu al Haman is that they basically made like negative statements about man. That's the word Tafel means. Taflu al Haman, which is, what color is man? Man is white. Right? So being Tafal vilavan, it sounds like he's describing places, but again, it's just a code to describe the people who complained about what was white. Okay? Chatzeros, he suggests, is a reference to the argument, the fight against Korach. Let's keep on reading. V'dei Zahav, what is Dei Zahav? Again, it sounds like a location, but again, Rashi quotes the Midrashim, which suggests V'dei Zahav should actually be read as Dai Zahav. What does this mean, Dai Zahav? Dai Zahav means enough gold or too much gold. So Rashi quotes the Gemara and a Medrash, which says the following, that in the aftermath of the golden calf, one of the arguments that Moshe made, at least according to the Midrashic literature, is he said, God, you know whose fault it is that the Jewish people served this golden calf and built this golden calf? It's your fault, God. You know why? Because you gave them too much gold. As they left the Yam Suf, they were filled with wealth. So Vidi Zahav is Vidai Zahav. You gave us too much gold. Again, all these things are just allusions to different mistakes that the Jewish people made as they traveled in the desert. Baal Peor, the idol of Baal Peor, Korach, complaining in the Midbar, complaining in the Yam Suf, the golden calf. All these different things are alluded to in these words. Is that the simple read? No. But I believe Rashi would argue there is no simple read. Why do you have so many geographic locations? It must be that there is a deeper idea over here. Okay, that's verse 1. Let's go to verse 2. Any questions, right? You following how Rashi's reading these verses? Basically, each of these locations is an allusion to some previous sin. It doesn't end. There's still more rebuke because, again, Eila Hadvarim, this is a rebuke. So then the next pasuk says that it's 11 days. Where they're standing right now, it's 11 days away from Chorev. Again, Chorev is what? Chorev is Har Sinai. That means that between Har Sinai and the edge of the Jordan is a travel journey of 11 days. That's nothing. That's just a short walk away, right? And Moshe's telling them, guys, we could have been here 40 years ago. We stood at Har Sinai and we could have just hopped over and been in Israel. It was 11 days away. But because of you, because of all the sins that you committed leading up to the sin of the spies, we were stuck for 40 years, right? So telling them how close this location is to Har Sinai is again another dig, not a dig, but another form of rebuke, telling them, guys, it is, you know, you wasted 40 years of life outside of Israel had you not committed these sins, okay? Now, let's go a little bit further. Vayhi, next, go to the next verse. We're going to keep on reading this according to Rashi. And it was in the 40th year, right? In the 11th month, Moshe spoke to the Jewish people. Okay, why do we need to know that it was in the 40th year? We need to know that, Rashi suggests, is because that Moshe did something very strategic. And it actually wasn't Moshe's own idea, but it's an idea that goes back to the forefathers. And that is that we only rebuke people close to our death. Who did that first? Yaakov, right? Yaakov, before, right, in Parshas Vayechi, right before he dies, he says, he gathers them around, and what does he do? He gives it to Reuven, he gives it to Shimon, he gives it to Levi, right? He doesn't do so before, because Rashi quotes, he was afraid that had he given them too much rebuke before, they would have ran away. The children would have departed, they would have left, and they would have joined up with Esav. Isn't that powerful, by the way? Right? Imagine that. Just take those words seriously for a second. The Midrashim are suggesting that had Yaakov rebuked his children, given them the appropriate rebuke, if he would have really told them off, it would have driven the Shivteka, the holy tribes, and they would have went and joined forces with Esav and left their own father, right? Before you give someone rebuke, think twice, right? I mean, that's a really, really powerful statement, right? Okay, so Moshe learns from Jacob, from Yaakov, and he does the same thing. Just like Yaakov doesn't rebuke until he dies. So here we are in the 40th year. Moshe knows he's going to die, and he does die according to our tradition. You know, he dies in a week from this date, Zayin Adar. This is the first of Adar. And so it's right before his death. Okay, now's an appropriate time. And that's why the Torah is telling us that it's 40 years. Then he goes further. Okay, let's keep on reading. Acharei Hakoso. Then it tells us, again, 40th year. And it was after he killed the king of Sichon, the king of Og. Why do we need to know that? Again, another question we said. Okay, tell me the date. It's 40 years later. Why do we also know that it was after he defeated these kings? So once again, Rashi suggests, and we have a beautiful idea, that Rashi says that Moshe recognized that he couldn't criticize the Jewish people until they felt like he had given them something. In other words, which is interesting, right? He took them out of Egypt, but forget that, right? And the truth is, it's the next generation. So Moshe is saying, look, I can't go ahead and criticize them before they'll basically say, oh, all you do is tell us off? I don't want to listen to you, right? So what does Moshe do? It's only after he defeats these nations, and now the Jewish people were in possession of a tremendous plot of land. The Transjordan was a huge area. Now that Moshe has helped them out, okay, He helped them out. You know, I'm blanking on who it is. One of the marriage experts, they call it the love bank. Okay, the love bank. And what that means is you have to invest in the love bank before you take out from the love bank. And what he means by that is that, you know, if all you hear is critique, you can't critique until you've invested love, right? If I've given you and given you and given you, then I can, okay, every time I criticize a person, every time you criticize someone, you're kind of diminishing them. So the only way you're allowed to criticize, you know, is only if you give a lot of good, right? They say there should be a 9-to-1 ratio in households between spouses or children, 9 compliments or positive remarks for every negative remark. Everyone raise their hand if you keep that ratio. Just kidding. Okay, right? But think about that, right? But you really have to invest and invest and invest, and then, okay, you have to tell someone off a little bit, you know? But think about it. You know, I always, once in a while, my wife and I catch ourselves with the children, like, we're always redirecting them, not even critique, we're always redirecting, which is a form of critique, right? Telling them what to do, and you need to invest. That's exactly what's going on over here. Moshe, it's only after he defeats, after he gives to them, okay, here it's in a material sense, but it's the same idea. Only after he gives to them, he defeats Sich, he defeats Og, etc., gives them this huge piece of land, okay, now we can start critiquing them because he invested, so to speak, in the love bank. Okay? So let's just pause, let's just appreciate. So according to Rashi, these opening verses are a thinly veiled rebuke. Okay? That's what these verses are all about. Ela hadvar meshadibar Moshe l'kol Yisrael. These are the words of rebuke that Moshe gave the Jewish people. And where's the rebuke? This is the rebuke. Bamidbar, that's one rebuke. Bar Rava, that's another rebuke. Mol Suf is another rebuke. Bein Paran is another rebuke. Etc., etc., etc. All the way until Pasuk Gimel, those are all different forms of rebuke. So according to Rashi, these verses, again, are not an introduction to the rest of the book. It's simply words of rebuke that the book begins with. And that's the approach of Rashi. Okay, now let's move on and let's start talking to some big picture commentators. Ones that I spoke about when I started. Commentators who understand that there is something much broader going on over here and understand and see in this introduction, really an introduction, as I said, the entirety of the book. Okay? So, let's move on to the approach of the Malbim. The Malbim was a brilliant commentator, lived about 150 years ago, and he says like this. He agrees with Rashi that there was rebuke. He's not as creative as Rashi and suggesting that this is all homiletics and each of these locations are really of thinly veiled rebuke. But he agrees in the opening words, Eile hadvar mashadiver Moshe l'kol Yisrael be'evar yarden. These are the words of rebuke, okay? And then what is the purpose of these locations? He suggests that Moshe rebuked the Jewish people in each of these locations. Let's count them. Meaning, this is the way Malbim reads these verses. I'll read it in English now. These are the words, i.e. rebuke words, which Moshe spoke unto all Yisrael beyond the Jordan. These are the words, and we're going to hear the words soon. But first, I want to tell you where he told them. It's not now the geographic locations over the locations over here are not one location. They're actually, as we'll see, 11 different locations where Moshe rebuked the Jewish people. There were 11 speeches of rebuke. There was a series. It was called the Rebuke Series, okay? And so for 11 days in different places, it wasn't consecutive, but in 11 different places, Moshe rebuked the Jewish people. Where? Bamidbar in the deserts. Barava in a place, the plains. Mol Suf, when he was opposite the Yamsuf. Bein Paran uvein Tofel, okay? Another between Paran and Tofel. Vilavan, another place. Vechatzeros, another place. Vidizahav, another place. The Malbim suggests these are 8 different places. Okay, these are 8 different places that Moshe criticized the Jewish people, rebuked the Jewish people. Okay, and let's go to verse 2. Achad asar yom, it is 11 days. Now, if you're reading in the English, I'm going to add a period over here. Okay, it is 11 days. Boom, you see that? Okay, there's a period. It is 11 days, meaning for 11 days, Moshe criticized the Jewish people, rebuked the Jewish people. Now, we only mentioned 8 locations. Well, there's 3 more locations in this verse. It was on the journey from Chorev, okay, on to Kadesh Barnea, location number 10, by the way of Mount Seir, location number 11. So the 11 locations over here are 11 distinct places where Moshe criticized or rebuked the Jewish people, and that's what this opening 2 verses are telling us. It's telling us that Moshe rebuked the Jewish people, where? In 11 different places, and it took him a total of 11 days to do so. Interesting? I think so. Okay, so let's keep on reading though. Okay, so it took him 11 days to rebuke the Jewish people in these different places. Okay, now here's where it gets very interesting. In verse 3, it tells us like this. Again, let's read it in English now. And it came to pass in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moshe spoke unto the children of Israel, according unto all that the Lord had given him in commandment unto them. Suggests the Malbim. This verse is fundamental because there is a section in the Talmud which seems to indicate that some of the ideas mentioned in this book are Moshe's own ideas. They're ideas that Moshe suggests or says on his own. Now, we have a principle of belief that all of the entirety of the Torah comes from God. So, what does that mean that some of these ideas come from Moshe? So the Malbim suggests the following. Moshe criticized the Jewish people for 11 days in those 11 different places. But in the 40th year, God came along and said, Moshe, remember those times that you rebuked the Jewish people? Those 11 times in this place and in that place? And that must have taken place, by the way, over the course of 40 years. In those 11 times you rebuked the Jewish people, I want you to take all those words and I want you to write them into the Torah. Right? In other words, Moshe did say these words of rebuke on his own, but now in the 40th year, God tells him, I want you to write it all down. I want you to write all those words of rebuke down. And why? Okay, and why does... So really, yes, it's true, they did come from Moshe, but ultimately God is endorsing them, and now they become the word of God because God is saying, hey, yes, these were your words of rebuke, but they're so good, they're now going to be recorded, and I command you to put those words into the Torah. Okay? Now, why does he do so now? Very obviously, just like Rashi said, because it's the 40th year, he is going to die. He is going to die. He's no longer going to be around. Okay? And let's keep on reading. Let's skip to verse 5 now. And there's the other side of the Jordan, the Eretz Moav, Hoel Moshe Be'er Es HaTorah HaZos Lemer. Moshe began to explain the Torah. Suggest the Malbim that there's a lot going on over here. These opening verses are telling us three ideas. Idea number one is that as the Jewish people journeyed in the desert at 11 different locations, Moshe rebuked the Jewish people. In the 40th year, God told him, remember those 11 rebukes, those days of rebuke? Take them all and write them in the Torah. Why? Because you're going to die soon. And since you're going to die soon, and here's verse 5, since you're going to die soon, now is also the appropriate time to explain the entirety of the Torah. Anything that wasn't explained before, now's the time to explain the Torah. And so really what's happening in this section over here is we're being told that Moshe is rebuking the Jewish people, God's telling him to incorporate all those rebukes into the Torah, and since, why? Because he's going to die. And since he's going to die, it's a good time to explain the entirety of the Torah. Suggest the Malbim, this is a reflection of the entirety of the book of Devarim, because what is the book of Devarim about? He says two things. He says, if someone were to ask you what is Devarim about, it's two things. One, words of rebuke. It's words of rebuke. And the truth is, as you begin the book of Bamidbar, Devarim, the Parsha of Devarim, and you go into Parshas Vaeschanan, you'll see, and really all the way up to chapter 12, it's all rebuke. It's reviewing bad episodes in Jewish history. And the first section of the book, it's all about rebuke. From chapter 12 and on, suggests the Malbim, it's all about mitzvos. It's all about mitzvos. So how do we know what the book of Devarim is all about? Suggest the Malbim, it's all in that first verse. It basically is telling us, Moshe knows he's going to die. It's the 40th year. He killed Sichon. He killed Og. It's basically, it means those are the last things that he does in his life. Those are his last actions. And since he knows he's going to die, now's the time, God tells him, to record all of the rebuke that he gave and to explain all the Torah. That is what the book is all about. You with me? Right? Are you following this? So basically, again, according to the Malbim, the purpose of these five verses is to explain to us the theme of the entire book. The theme of the entire book is rebuke and explanation of mitzvos. And all of that is spelled out, not alluded to, but is spelled out in these opening verses. Okay? That's one approach, and really seeing in these five verses a overview of the entirety of the book of the Torah and some interesting history. It's such a fascinating idea that Moshe on his own rebukes the Jewish people. You know, we always think of Moshe only acting through God, but the Malbim's arguing over here that no, Moshe of course spoke to the Jewish people constantly on his own and gave them his own words of rebuke, but God over here is endorsing it again. Okay, and that I think is just a little sidebar and very interesting idea. I want to show you one other approach of reading these opening verses. It's a little bit more, I'm not going to call it mystical, but it's somewhere between, you know, Rashi's homiletic approach and the Malbim in terms of the way to read these verses. So let's go down. This is a section from the Vilna Gaon. It's a translation. Let's see. Here we are. Okay? This is a translation from the Vilna Gaon. Again, the Vilna Gaon of Eliyahu of Vilna. He is called the Vilna Gaon, the genius of Vilna, because he was a genius. There are many amazing stories told about his incredible mind, and you'll see just a snippet of that over here. Okay? So here we go. He writes in a very terse style, and let's see what he says. He says, "Know that all the texts from These Are the Things up to the Lord our God are the introduction to the Sefer." Okay? In other words, he says that these five opening verses, okay, which we just read, that is really an introduction to the book of Devarim, which is what we were saying before, at least according to the Malbim, right? So the Vilna Gaon is suggesting that these opening verses, like we said before, is really an introduction to the book. Therefore, these verses include three mentions of Moshe speaking. Let's go back up for one second. If you recall, we pointed out that there's a little bit of repetition over here. It says, Ela hadvarim asher diber Moshe. These are the words that Moshe spoke. Again, now let's go to verse 3. Vayibar b'am shemaz in the 40th year, diber Moshe, Moshe spoke. Okay, then go to verse 5. Bever yardin beretzmov, hoel Moshe, Moshe began to explain. Speak, saying, right? He spoke, he spoke, he spoke. Why do you have to say it so many times? So, suggest the Vilna Gaon. Okay, let's go back to the text. Okay, he says, really, this is an introduction to this book. Therefore, these verses include three mentions of Moshe speaking. These are the things which Moshe spoke. Moshe spoke to Bnei Israel, and Moshe began. So why three? The reason for this is because this Sefer has three parts, right? Recall, the Malbim said there are two parts. The Vilna Gaon suggesting there are three parts. And let's see how the Vilna Gaon breaks it down, and I would argue this is, to me, the most compelling breakdown of the book of Devarim. From the beginning of the Sefer, meaning from the beginning of the book, up to Moshe called out, preceding the Ten Commandments. Okay, so if you were to read through the book of Devarim, we're not going to go through the entirety of the book right now, but in a couple of chapters, we'll find Moshe reviewing the Ten Commandments. He says, from the beginning of the book until that section, that is all Moshe teaching Musar. What is Musar? Musar, again, is rebuke. So the Vilna Gaon suggests the first part of the book is all rebuke. Then from Moshe called out, okay, those are the words leading up to the story of the giving of the Torah, up to the blessings and curses in Parshas Kisavo, right, which is towards the end of the book, that all teaches us commandments. Okay, so section number 2 is all about commandments. And from then on, the section dealing with the blessings and the curses and the other matters. The last part of the book, he says, is all blessings and curses. And I mentioned this actually when we began the class, right? The last section of the book is basically Moshe warning the Jewish people, if you don't do what's right, bad things are going to happen. But if you do what's right, good things will happen. So three sections to the book. Therefore, prior to Moshe called out, the text says, these are the testimonies and statutes. And thereafter begins Moshe called out. Okay, let's just skip that word. Okay, let's see the next paragraph. And these three matters represent all of the Torah. He says these three ideas, meaning now this is classic Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon goes micro, macro, and back again. He sees everything. You know, they say the way, if you want to understand the Vilna Gaon's mind, I'll tell you a very quick story about the Vilna Gaon, okay? This is actually a story. You know, I'm always a little a little skeptical of stories. It depends on where they come from. You know, we're unfortunately have too many hagiographies of these people. You know, of these rabbi stories of you know, these great amazing things happen. You really want to read a story not from a fan but from an enemy. Okay, so there is a story written by a maskil, someone who was an intellectual who, so to speak, you know, kind of went off the derech, so to speak, a Jewish intellectual, and he once went to visit the Vilna Gaon, and he said, I have a bunch of questions. The Vilna Gaon said, okay, fine, ask me your questions. And this is him relating what happened. So basically he lists a question, and the Vilna Gaon says, okay, what other questions do you have? And he says another question, and he says, what other questions do you have? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Until he asks, I forget the number now, somewhere like 70 questions when he was done, okay? A lot of questions. And then he finishes all the questions, and the Vilna Gaon says, really, you only have 4 questions, because all those questions really could be distilled into these 4 points, okay? So he breaks it all down, and then he gives him an answer to those questions, and then the person says, but what about XYZ? And the Vilna Gaon says, you didn't listen to my answer. And he repeats word for word what he already answered, because in his answer, he clearly already addressed all those points, right? So this is, I can't not go there, but right, for anyone who's been watching the news, you know, the president just recently talked about a test of cognition about remembering a couple of words, okay? So over here, the Vilna Gaon remembered 70 questions, okay? And then broke down the questions and demonstrated how they're really four questions, and then went ahead and answered them, and if in case the person had any questions on, he said, no, you don't have any questions, you just weren't listening to my answer because my answer already addressed all your questions. The Vilna Gaon was a genius, okay? This is what he does. So he says, look, and now let's go back to what he's saying over here. He says, yeah, look, there are three sections to the book of Devarim, but he says the truth is this represents all the Torah. Really, there are three sections to the entirety of the Torah. Sorry. Okay. And he says, okay, meaning these three matters, rebuke, mitzvos, blessings, and curses. He says, if someone were to ask you to summarize, what is the Torah all about? Many of us would say stories and things like that. He says, no. The Torah is all about rebuke, and that's what much of the stories are. It's about promises, good will happen or bad will happen, and it's about mitzvos. Those three things, that is the essence of the Torah, the Vilna Gaon is telling us over here. Cool? Pretty cool. That is, if someone were to ask you, what is the entirety of the Torah, you'll tell them the Vilna Gaon says, rebuke, as we see through the stories, promises about reward and punishment, essentially, blessings and curses, and mitzvos. That is the entirety of the Torah. And he says there are really only three books of the Torah. Shemos, Vayikra, Bamidbar. You're like, no, there are more books. But he says, no. Bereishis is the root of the Torah. Okay, now we're getting a little Kabbalistic. Okay? But he says, this is why the Midrashic literature, the early Midrashic literature, the original Midrash, not there's a lot of later Midrash, things we call Midrash, but the original Midrash is Sifra, Sifri, and Mechilta. The only three sections, because really the only three sections of Torah. And this is the meaning, he says, there's a statement in the Gemara and Shabbos for all of you doing Daf Yomi. He gave a three-part teaching, meaning three books. And the three parts of Sefer Devarim correspond to the three books of the Torah. He says the three parts of Devarim correspond to the three parts of the Torah. Okay, let's see how that adds up. Okay, let's go. I'm gonna just roll this back to the text, just because this is just mind-boggling how he noticed all this. Okay, so let's say, again, he's telling us that it says Moshe spoke three times, because there are three sections to this book, and those three sections really represent the three sections of the entirety of the Torah, which represent the three books of the Torah, okay? Now let's go back to each of the three times that says Moshe spoke, okay? So it's Eileh HaDvarim, these are Eileh, right? These are the words. Again, according to the Vilna Gaon, what is the first book of the Torah? He says Bereishis is really the root, it's underground. What's the first book of the Torah according to the Vilna Gaon? The book of Shemos. What does Shemos begin with? With which words? Eileh. Okay? The words Eileh. And this section, which begins the rebuke of the Torah, okay, begins with the words Eileh, which corresponds to the first section. So the first section of Devarim, which is the rebuke, begins the word Eileh, and so does the first book in the Vilna Gaon scheme, the book of Shemos. So Eileh, Eileh. The next section, he told us, starts when? It starts when, the first section of this book, again, is all about rebuke, and then it transitions to a discussion of the mitzvos. Okay, so let's see where that takes place. Here we are. This is where it transitions. The beginning of chapter 5 is when it starts talking about the mitzvos. How does that section begin? Vayikra Moshe. What is the third book? What is the second book called in the Vilna Gaon scheme? What we call the third book? It's the book of Vayikra, right? Okay, let's move on to the fourth section. The third section, according to the Vilna Gaon, is where the blessings and curses begin. Okay, that is found in chapter 27, verse 9. Okay, that's when we start, right in the middle of chapter 27 is when the laws end. And now chapter 27 in the middle, verse 9, is when we begin discussing the blessings and the curses. What does that section begin with? Vayidaber Moshe, right? Vayidaber, which is, of course, the first word of the book of Bamidbar Vayidaber. Wild? I think it's wild. As you know, this is not my typical, those things don't normally appeal to me. But think about the brain that you need to be able to have noticed all of that. And it wasn't like he was doing nothing all day, right? The Vilna Gaon was studying. Sorry, give me 1 second. Here we go. Yeah, right? I mean, just appreciate, right? Even if that doesn't speak to you, that type of learning, but just to be able to see all that. Did you catch all that? Did you see what just happened, right? He just, all those words which begin the different sections, because the Vilna Gaon in his mind understands that the entirety of the Torah gets distilled into three different concepts: rebuke, curses, and mitzvos. which is what this final book, the book of Devarim, really is the summary of the entirety of the Torah. That's what it's called, Mishnah Torah. It's the repetition, it's the summary of the Torah. But that means that it has to be, that it's alluded to in the opening five verses, and that's the three times it says that Moshe spoke. Vayidaber, right? The opening words, again, not each time to say Vayidaber, but I'm sorry, let me just pull it up again. Right, let's get those words. Right, Eilad Bar Masher, Diber Moshe, and then Diber Moshe, then Hoel Moshe. Each of those speak to Moshe's speaking. That teaches us that there are three speakings in this book. The three speakings are, again, rebuke, all the way up to the words Vayikra. Then there is mitzvos, all the way up to the words Vayidaber. And then there is the blessings and curses, which is the final section. So, and again, the Vilna Gaon in his brilliant mind just noticed that the first word represents the beginnings of those three books. Okay, so let's just summarize this a little bit because I think we saw a whole lot, and let's try to bring it back together. So, the opening verses of this parsha, the book, are a little bit hard to read. Okay, there's way too much geography. As someone, for any of you, anyone who studied Yoshua with me, you know geography is not my strong point. It's nice to see that there are those who understand that it's not just about geography. But let's not forget that the simple explanation, that of the Rashbam, says no. It's really just all those locations are describing one single location. That's how the Rashbam understands those opening verses. All those 11 locations are helping us pinpoint the precise location that Moshe gave rebuke. And you should know, by the way, that this is something the Torah does in different places. Sometimes it does give us a lot of description about a particular place. If you want to go back to the book of Genesis, the book of Bereshis, where it describes Avram setting up a tent, it gives a very pinpointed location based on a whole bunch of different nearby locations. So it's something the Torah does. It's a style the Torah utilizes, okay? That's how the Rashbam understands what's going on over here, right? Rashi understands, right, that the opening verses is the rebuke itself. The opening verses, that is the rebuke. We learned some beautiful lessons from Rashi about the fact that we don't rebuke people explicitly. We allude to it. We have to also recognize that how negatively impactful rebuke could be, that Yaakov and Moshe were both afraid to rebuke the Jewish people until the end of their lives because they were afraid of how it would be too harsh and they may force them to walk away, right? Again, to think twice before we go ahead and rebuke anyone. And Moshe only goes ahead and rebukes after he gives them an incredible size of land. Again, we want to invest in that love bank, okay? But then we have the Malbim and the Vilna Gaon seeing these five verses as an introduction to the entire book of Devarim. Okay, the Malbim suggests, again, let's just summarize the first five verses according to him. He suggests that throughout their journey in the desert, over the course of 11 days out of those 40 years, whatever reason, for 11 days, Moshe went ahead and rebuked the Jewish people. It wasn't 11 consecutive days. It took place one time in a place in the desert, one time in the plains, one time in a place called Dizahav. In total, there are 11 times that Moshe on his own rebuked the Jewish people. And now, before he dies, God says, go and take all those messages that you gave them, incorporate them into the Torah, because you're going to die soon and they need to hear rebuke from you. And since you're going to die, also take this opportunity to explain the entirety of the Torah. All of that is said in the first five verses, and that's what this entire book is about. It's about rebuking the Jewish people before he dies, Moshe dies, and it's about giving them the mitzvos, explaining the mitzvos that they may not have understood. So according to the Malbim, again, those first five verses are a summary of the entire book of Devarim. And according to him, there's only two sections to the book of Devarim. The Vilna Gaon, we're not going to review the entirety of it now, but the Vilna Gaon again understands that there are three sections to the Torah, to Devarim. The first section is rebuke. The second section is mitzvos, and the third section is the blessings and the curses. So again, according to the Vilna Gaon, the book of Devarim is not in two sections like the Malbim says, but rather it's three sections. And then as we saw, the Vilna Gaon said that's not just the book of Devarim that could be summarized in those three sections, but rather that is the way we summarize the entirety of the Torah, mitzvos, rebuke, and blessings and curses, i.e. prophecies about what will happen if you do what's right or do what's wrong. Okay, so I hope now you now understand, going back to our opening lines, the title of this class, the definitive introduction to the book of Devarim is not me. It's the first five verses according to the Malbim and Vilna Gaon. They are explaining that is the introduction to Devarim. The first five verses tell us what the entire book is about, and whether it's two sections or three sections is a matter of debate. Okay? I hope, again, this is the overarching view. Usually we like to zoom in a little bit, but I hope now we have a good view of the whole book of Devarim, and God willing, we'll be able to study it together week by week. Of course, next week there will not be a class because it is Tisha B'Av. There'll be other forms of learning and praying together, davening together in different ways. There won't be a class, and I hope you all have a beautiful Shabbos. Thank you all for joining. Thank you so much. Have a good Shabbos. I just unmuted you. Just heads up. Have a good Shabbos, everyone. Take care. Thanks so much for joining.